ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथिता कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Naturally, in discussion of this name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tirthakar, as found in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, I've mentioned the names of many Tirthas, especially in relation with Vishnu, Shiva, and Devi, and also some imaginary tirthas for imaginary gods, modern, newfangled, invented gods. The tirthas of these deities, they're all over India. It's, as I made that point, it's not that there were people living in India and then they were invaded from the north and they pushed the dark-skinned people down to the south. All rubbish ideas. Vaishnava tirthas, very famous ones. Well, actually, if we take the Char Dham, it's spread in the cardinal points of India, then they're all Vaishnav connected. Puri, Jagannath. Now there are theories that previously Jagannath was worshipped as Shiva. I don't know where Subhadra and Balabhadra would come in that. And as Buddha, because Buddhism was very prominent in Utkal Pradesh. At one time, there's a train from Howrah to Bhuvaneshwar called Dhaule Express. Dhaule is a place near Bhuvaneshwar, which was a place of Buddhist monasteries, and I've never been there, but it's still there. Can be seen carved in the rocks, various Buddhist representations and motifs. So it may be that the Buddhists worship Jagannath. Good for them if they did. It's a step up from being a hardcore Buddhist. Yeah, hardcore Buddhists shouldn't worship anyone, even Buddha. There's no worship. In fact, they shouldn't even breathe. Why should they breathe? Why breathe? Why do anything? So, Puri, Dwaraka. Badrinath is not generally considered a place of for Vaishnavas, specifically for Vaishnavas. And generally Vaishnavas, we don't find that it's part of the specifically Vaishnava Tirtha circuit, if there is such a thing, or a place that specifically Vaishnavas go to. Although we find that Krishna, when he was leaving this world, told Uddhava to go to Badrinath to enlighten the sages there about him. And of course, Badrinath is Vishnu. Now, there's no one argues about that. And then Rameshwaram is, of course, a place of Shiva. But that Shiva deity was established by Lord Rama. Or Sita, if you like. Sita and Ram. So they're all, but again, it's not specifically frequented by Vaishnavas. Here in the, they'll go, because if they come from the north, they'll just so many Marathis, Gujaratis, Rajasthanis, and others will come to Rameshwaram on their Chardham Yatra, and they'll visit Madurai also, and they'll visit Sri Rangam and Tirupati. These are the two most famous places. Actually, Tirupati is famous. Otherwise, in the north of India, hardly anyone heard of Rameshwaram. No one heard of Guruvaya, hardly. It's not part of the culture. Even Nathdwara, that's known mainly only by the Vallabh Sampradaya Vaishnavas. Such a big, important place of pilgrimage. So like that. Anyway, there are so many holy places connected. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said that Uttar Pradesh was the best state in India because it has so many holy places. He said that. Well, of course, at that time, the state which is now called Uttarakhand was still part of Uttar Pradesh. So some of the holy places got cut off. But still, so Mathura, Vrindavan, then Prayagraj, Ayodhya, Varanasi, these are the prominent. Chitrakoot, little bit in UP, mostly in MP. Naimisharanya, yeah, there are so many. The hub of the universe. Navadvip is definitely a holy place for Vaishnavas, and specifically for Gauriya Vaishnavas. Others don't go there. Only Gauriya Vaishnavas. There is an ancient temple of, what's her name? Parama, of Durga. Temple is not exactly a temple. It's a bit strange. It's something inside a tree. But that's everywhere. Everywhere, wherever there's any settlement of Hindus throughout India, there'll be a Durga temple, for sure. But because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, obviously, for the Gauriya Vaishnavas, Navadvip is the most visited, and Vrindavan very much so also, but not nearly as much because it's a long way to go. And previously, to go to Vrindavan from Bengal was a major undertaking. And Puri is also very popular with the Gauriya Vaishnavas and Bengalis in general. It's a holiday. The main clientele, well, apart from coming to visit Puri for Darshan of Jagannath specifically, Puri's economy is largely boosted by the Bengali tourist trade during the winter especially. They just go, they'll visit Jagannath, but it's more or less go to the beach, take a photo, and all this kind of thing. And plenty of fish there also, so they're happy. Sea fish. And of course there are other holy places connected with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his pastimes and his associates. I mentioned previously there's three parts. There are so many, but there's nothing like, there's nothing comparable to Navadvip. Navadvip Mayapur. Mayapur became popularized by, initially by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but really in a big way by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then in a very big way by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. I remember seeing, first time I went to Mayapur, 1976. On Gaur Purnima, we were just all astonished by the crowd, so many people coming. It's just, not just astonished, but there's no room to move. The whole pathway is completely packed. And never seen anything like it. Yeah, you'll get you'll get huge crowds for sports, especially soccer games in the West. But that's completely different. I mean, that's got crowds, yes, but not for a religious purpose. It's unimaginable. In the churches, the big churches, that people mostly go just to look at them as some kind of a tourist attraction, just to look. And the idea that you should actually get down on your knees and pray doesn't occur to. And many of the churches, they're just empty. Even on Sundays. I remember some years ago, one of my disciples in London, Gujarati by background, as he was a shopkeeper in one area, and he was working with other local people for keeping up the social standards or something like that, protection against crime and all this kind of thing. So the local church pastor invited him to come to church on Christmas Day, which is the day when you expect the Christians to go. And he went to church, and in the church he told me there was the pastor himself and one black woman. Maybe Jesus was there too, but they didn't see him. It must have been a Protestant church, so they wouldn't have Jesus hanging on the cross. They only have that in Catholic churches, probably Orthodox also. In Protestants, they just have the cross, and you have to imagine Jesus, so better not imagine. So for so much enthusiasm for religion, and of course now the crowds have increased so much. That was 1976. Huge, huge crowds. Mayapur's also become something like a tourist spot. In fact, some of the Gaudiya Mathas, they criticize ISKCON as the tourist mandir. Because if you want a day out with your friends and family or your workmates, Mayapur's good. There's nice gardens and this and that. Anyway, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted people to come to Mayapur. At one point he made one exhibition of completely mundane things to attract people, because who's going to come for some esoteric religious reasons to come out to the rice fields and the remote Nadia district, and you can get a train, and then how do you go after that? It's then you're by yourself. Even there wouldn't have been a train and then a rickshaw to Navadvip Ghat, but then there wouldn't have been regular boat services at that time to Mayapur. You'd have to hire a boat specially, because there wasn't. Now there's regular boat services between Navadvip Ghat and Hular Ghat for Mayapur. But at that time there wouldn't have been. And then there was no road either. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made a road. Otherwise there was no. It was not easy to come, and why would people come? So he made some mundane attractions in the beginning just to get people to come. And of course, along with the exhibition of all different artifacts connected with agriculture, because that's what most of the people in the area are interested in, is agriculture. And they had some, what else did they have? So exhibitions of scientific and industrial things. But he had also his spiritual exhibition along with it. And people came to... So he somehow or other he got people to come to Mayapur in the beginning. But then Srila Prabhupada made the best building in Bengal. It was generally considered like that when it was first built. It's still there, but you can't see it very well, because it's been built on top of also what's called the Lotus Building, but it's been merged with what's now the present main temple, the temporary main temple, which is again joined with the Chakra Building. So that was something, but the main attraction was the Western Vaishnavas. That was a big attraction, and still is. it's still not as much as it was, but it was really a sensation. Srila Prabhupada, he had insight into what would capture people's attention and what to do. He was a visionary. For instance, he went to America. Anyone would have thought, from India, generally people think if you're going to try and do something in the West, then you've got to go to England. That'd been the standard thing, but Prabhupada saw America's, and now America is the most powerful country in the world and most influential. Prabhupada went to America, and he recognized the importance of the English language. He made his books, his first books in India, he wrote them in English. So he recognized the importance of English as a worldwide language. It's actually, for our devotees in countries where they're not raised with English language, like Russia, for instance, then it's somewhat of a handicap that if you don't know English, you can't listen to Prabhupada's, you can't understand Srila Prabhupada's lectures, and you can't read his books in English, and for the whole world, Russian is not very useful, but English is. So Prabhupada recognized that, and since Prabhupada went to the West, the learning of English has become a major phenomenon throughout the whole world. I saw at one point some advertisement, there are more people learning in China, there are more people learning English in China than there are people in England. So Prabhupada, he was a visionary in so many ways. Anyway, back to the topic of pilgrimage. So it's quite an event, seeing the Gaudiya Vaishnavas visiting or going to a different place. I mean, even in South India, people are surprised when they see the Gaudiya Vaishnavas dancing. it's not considered very religious to dance and sing with musical instruments. Even in the churches, most of the churches, they're very solemn and grave. Although we do find in the Bible, there's a whole book of the Bible called the Book of Psalms. Psalms means hymns to God, and which is said, praise the Lord with trumpets. That's all I can remember from the whole Book of Psalms. It's something about singing and dancing. We used to sing this almost every day in school, and I just remember the first line. I guess I wasn't a very good student. But it's really, there's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's moment. He sang, he danced in love of Krishna, and he induced everyone else to do so also. I was just listening to How I Came to Krishna Consciousness by Dayanand Swami. Dayanand Swami? How did he? Yes, there's an ISKCON Swami called Dayanand Swami. apart from the founder of the Arya Samaj and the South Indian Dayananda Swami, from England. So he said that as a young boy, he was in his house and his father called him, "Come here, come here." And it was on TV, the Hare Krishna devotees. First time he'd been seen. He said, "Look at that," his father said to him. He said, "That's real religion." And the boy said, who was later to become a Swami, "How do you know it's religion?" "Because they're so happy." Very good, huh? We don't know the effect of this Krishna consciousness, how people are affected. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he visited so many holy places, holy places and ordinary places, and all of them became holy places if they weren't already holy places by the touch of his lotus feet. And the places that were already holy places became even more special by the touch of his lotus feet. So Puri is a great place for Gaurīya Vaiṣṇavas because Jagannath's there. And it's also the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You may remember seeing just at the beach, they have a statue of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, large statue. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, apart from, generally we think of Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava of Bengal, but actually the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very widely spread in Orissa also. That was after the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shyamananda and Rasikananda spread it. Well, especially Rasikananda spread it widely in Utkal Pradesh. And the songs of Narottam Thakur are very well known. They have their own kirtan style and everything. And Prataparudra Maharaj, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going from Puri to Vrindavan via Bengal, and Prataparudra Maharaj said, "Every place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stops, we'll make it into a pilgrimage place. We'll make a pillar and everything." And up to the present day, there are many places in Orissa where they say, "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here on such and such a date, in such and such a year," and they have a mela on that day, and they feel very happy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited our village. So, Prabhupada and before him Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they in many ways revived Gaurīya Vaiṣṇavism, but it wasn't that it didn't exist, it was going on. There were many deviations, no doubt, but there were Gaurīya Vaiṣṇavas, but it would have remained in Bengal only, Bengal, Orissa, local, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur hadn't made the endeavor to bring that to the whole world, which Srila Prabhupada fructified. And it's still going on. It's every town and village, it's still not every town and village, right? It's not even every town and village in India. In Bengal, definitely in every town and village, people have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not in Tamil Nadu. You should go. Oh, you can't go. You're all locked down. You should go in every town and village and tell people about this golden avatar who has descended to save us from being Tamils or Bengalis or Hindus or Brahmanas, to save us from our mundane designations and to join with him in his eternal dancing. Gauranga Nritya Nitya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing is going on right now. And it goes on forever. We may be surprised. From Chaitanya Bhagavat, Nityananda Prabhu danced non-stop for 3 months with all his associates. It's only 3 months. Only three. For us, it's impossible to imagine. But that is that's quite possible. Now, I'm just going to speak something about Makar Sankranti as talking about Bengal. I've not been I'm talking about Ganga Sagar Mela, which occurs every year on Makar Sankranti, is it not? I believe so. I didn't know anything about it. The first time was sometime in the 1970s when I was in Bora Bazaar in Calcutta, which is full of shops run by Marwaris and the coolies or Biharis and UP Wale and the Telawalas and Hindi spoken more than Bengali there. And I saw all these buses. In those days, buses meant bone shakers. There were no fancy buses. And the roads were also specially made for chiropractic treatment. Shake all your bones. The only thing is to shake your bones out of place, not into place. And completely packed up. I saw all these buses packed up with Marwari ladies. That's another how the seats, which are meant for two skinny Bengalis, and they have three fat Marwari ladies on each seat. So that's part of India's mysticism, that they can do things which are, by normal calculation, impossible. Actually, I had that experience. This is a bit mundane, but anyway. Again, once in Bora Bazaar, Calcutta, I saw a car stop. A car means an ambassador car. That was a car in those days. And for the next maybe 10 minutes, all these fat Marwari ladies kept on getting out with all their pots and pans. And how could there be so many inside a car? I thought this is India's mysticism. How is this possible? So I was with them. What's going on? You don't usually see them in buses, these women. You don't usually see them much at all on the streets. Oh, and then he told they're going to Ganga Sagar. As far as I know, in those days at least, you could only go as far as Diamond Harbour, and then you had to go by boat or something like that, down in the Sundarban. So Sundarban means beautiful forest. It's the jungles in the south of both West Bengal and East Bengal, and the Ganga Delta, and there are all tigers down there and crocodiles and all kinds of things, snakes. And it's quite a wild place. It's really a jungle up to the present time. And they're mostly all Hindus and Vaishnavas of sorts. Fish eating, but Vaishnavas. So I got a nice description here. A cross-section of Hindu society assembles here at the Ganga Sagar Mela, where people go and they get liberation. I mentioned before about Das Gupta, the accountant. He went and he got liberation. He went and took bath there. So a cross-section of Hindu society assembles here. Families with devotion in their heart. Sadhus come for moksha. And I guess there must be the bowels also. Some would be there for sure, even though they're not supposed to go. They decry pilgrimage and they go on pilgrimage. With a bowel, and there are no rules. If there are rules, they're meant for breaking. That's all. The main thing is got to be different from the mainstream society. It's like the hippies. They're all different in the same way. The hippies wanted to be different, so they all grew long hair. They all put flowers in their hair. They all took intoxication of illegal types. Whereas people will be singing there. Definitely you'll get blind beggars who will sing. They're actually often very good singers, blind people, because I guess their sense of hearing becomes improved by having to rely on it so much. And that's the standard thing on the trains in Bengal also. Some blind beggar comes singing very nicely, very often Hare Krishna mantra. People there telling some stories, jugglers and all kinds of people. People come to sell things. They make little, nowadays they wonder, they used to make little toys at home from wood and something like that. You pull it along a cart like that. You'll see pictures of Krishna with little toys like that. They're going on for generations. Now they have made in China, all kinds of machine guns and all kinds of things. Prostitutes are there. Generally in holy places, they're prostitutes because I guess people get fed up of being too religious too much. Gamblers, invalid beggars, politicians come to get their photo taken and put in the newspaper. I was there mixing with the common people. Bharat Sevashram Sangha will be there. That's a religious group which does, in all the holy places frequented by Bengalis, you'll see an ashram at the Bharat Sevashram Sangha. Oh, you won't see it because it's written in Bengali usually. And they provide social services for the pilgrims, and the thieves are there also, of course. Good place for thieves. So, hey, what are you going to steal? Just petty thieves. No, not big time. Just thieves by caste, mostly. It's like if someone's father is a barber, you become a barber. Your father is a farmer, you become a farmer. Your father's a thief, you become a thief. It's the caste system. Nowadays, they all go to college and become IT professionals. And there's no one to do the farming. So, vanaprastha life. Let's get away from all this mundane talk. But it is religious. Because after all, people go to Ganga Sagar Mela with belief in the statements of the Shastra. Tirthas are especially meant for vanaprastha. Maybe I'll start that tomorrow. But I should say something a bit Krishna conscious before I finish this talk. So vanaprastha life, yeah? How many times Prabhupada quoted that? Panchas ordvang vanang vrajit. One should not remain packed up at home throughout all of one's life at the age of 50, according to Shastra. One should go to the forests. The idea is that hitvatna patam grihamandaku pam vanangato yadharim ashrayata. Prahlad Maharaj told his father, give up the cause of downfall of the self. Having given up hitvātmapātam, what is that, the cause of downfall of the self? The griha, which is a blind well. That you're walking around, everything's right now, you don't see it, you just fall into it. And go to the forests to take full shelter of Lord Hari. So the idea is that age of 50. So if you marry young, then you have grown-up children, grown-up sons specifically, and you can, at the age of 50, when you're still in good health and with the wisdom that should come with age, that will come with age, if one spends one's life not engaging in household life simply for sense gratification, but doing daily sadhana. And then the foolishness of youth should have passed, but yeah, by the age of 50, especially if one is engaged in regular daily sadhana and makes the goal of life Krishna conscious. So it's a good age to leave home. Then one's discharged the family responsibility, and the body is still in good shape, should be, if one's led a clean life. And one has acquired knowledge, not only from study, which is the beginning of study is in early life. That's the time for education, for full-time education, for those who... But then one goes on studying throughout his life. It's not that one stops education when he leaves school. And then there's the school of life also. So with all these things, then it becomes a very solid foundation for the vanaprastha, to leave home and to become detached from family life and fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and possibly also prepare himself for sannyas, for preaching, for sharing that with others. But even if he doesn't officially take sannyas, if he's a spiritually advanced person with years of responsible living behind him, then naturally people, pious people, will like to take advice and instruction from him. So that's all. It's all part of the Varnashram system, which very much needs to be set up, especially in the West. I mean, there are important features of that Varnashram system still alive in India, the idea that we should look after the elders. But the idea that the elders should instruct spiritually, that's not much there anymore, because they didn't get it themselves. They have no such idea. That has to be revived. But in the Western countries, the idea that you serve the elders and you take instruction from them spiritually, that doesn't exist. And therefore we find so many frustrated older devotees who have so much to share and can guide young people. They can see the young people, the kind of mistakes they're making, and they can tell them, don't do that. because I've already been that way, and I know you shouldn't do that. And older people with their lifetime who've spent their life in Krishna consciousness, and they've studied, and they've become deep in Shastra, they have so much to share. It's not necessarily just sannyasis, but then we tend to think only a sannyasi is suitable for giving instruction. Or if they get designated as a guru, then he's very important. Otherwise, not very important. So it's a great loss to the Vaishnava society that the elders are not facilitated in such a way to guide others. And as a result, they may have to work for a living, and then the younger people think, well, they're just like me. I'm working for a living, they're working for a living. So really, we have a lot of work to do for reviving Varnashram culture. It's not just about farms. There's so much has to be revived. So Tirtha Yatra is especially for Vanaprastas. They leave home, they visit various holy places. They may come back time to time to their home, husband and wife together generally, or maybe the husband goes out, the wife stays at home and he comes back. There are various ways in which Vanaprastha life can be taken up. In ISKCON, in the West at least, we mostly see it that the wife bloops or runs off with someone else's husband, and then the man designates himself as a Vanaprastha, but that's not the Vedic system. Or he leaves the wife, and anyway, it's a mess. It's a real mess. And we need to establish all over the world holy places. They're there. They're already there with so many temples. But then places where people can come, spend time in study, in service, all these things. So there's some thoughts. And Krishna willing, I'll speak some more about tirthas for vanaprastas tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpa tarupyas charkipa sindhubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.